Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Triumph of the City, How Our Greatest Invention Makes Us Richer, Smarter, Greener, Healthier, and Happier is a work of urban economics and public policy by Harvard economist Edward Glaser. Published in 2011, it examines why cities have been central to human prosperity from ancient marketplaces to contemporary knowledge economies. Glaser argues that dense urban places are not historical accidents or merely physical concentrations of buildings. They are mechanisms for bringing people, firms, skills, and ideas into repeated contact. The book challenges familiar anti-urban assumptions about congestion, poverty, pollution, and disorder by comparing cities with realistic alternatives, especially suburbs and rural areas. Its purpose is both explanatory and prescriptive to show how cities generate innovation, income, cultural exchange, and environmental efficiency, and to argue for policies that allow successful cities to grow. Drawing on economic research, history, and examples such as New York, Detroit, Bangalore, and Silicon Valley, Glaser presents urban density as a practical tool for more productive and sustainable societies. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, density is the engine of ideas, productivity, and urban advantage. The central mechanism and triumph of the city is not the skyline, the subway, or municipal government, but proximity. Glaser argues that cities prosper because they reduce the distance between people who can learn from one another, hire one another, compete with one another, and combine knowledge in unexpected ways. This is especially important in a knowledge economy, where value often comes from information, design, finance, technology, law, education, and specialized services, rather than from the movement of raw materials. Dense cities make face-to-face contact easier, and Glaser treats such contact as a continuing advantage even in an age of digital communication. The book uses historical and contemporary examples to show that innovation often emerges from clusters of skilled people rather than from isolated talent. This argument also explains why some cities survive the decline of older industries while others struggle. A city that contains many educated, adaptable workers can shift from one economic base to another. A city dependent on a single industry or a narrow skill set is more vulnerable. Glaser therefore presents density as an economic process, not simply a demographic fact. Secondly, urban poverty is evidence of attraction, not only failure. One of the book's more controversial arguments is that urban poverty must be interpreted carefully. Glaser does not deny that poor neighborhoods can involve hardship, overcrowding, weak services, and insecurity. His point is comparative cities often attract poor people because they offer better prospects than the places those people leave. When rural residents or migrants move to cities, their movement may indicate that the city provides jobs, markets, social networks, education, or access to services unavailable elsewhere. This reframes the visible poverty of cities as partly a sign of urban opportunity. Glaser argues that judging cities by comparing poor urban residents with wealthy urban residents misses the more relevant comparison with rural poverty or stagnant regions. The implication is important for policy. Trying to keep poor people out of cities, or treating their arrival as proof that the city is failing, can worsen inequality by blocking access to opportunity. At the same time, this argument has limits. Critics reasonably note that urban opportunity does not erase the daily costs of poor housing, exposure to crime, or inadequate infrastructure. The book is strongest when it asks readers to separate the presence of poverty from the causes of poverty. Thirdly, why compact cities can be greener than low-density living? Glaser challenges the romantic assumption that living near open land is automatically more environmentally responsible than living in a city. His environmental argument rests on consumption patterns rather than scenery. Dense urban residents usually occupy smaller homes, travel shorter distances, and can rely more often on walking, public transit, elevators, shared infrastructure, and nearby services. By contrast, low-density settlement often requires larger houses, longer commutes, more automobile use, and greater energy consumption for heating, cooling, and transportation. The book therefore treats cities as a tool for reducing environmental impact, especially when growth is allowed in places with moderate climates and strong economic demand. This leads Glaser to criticize policies that restrict construction in productive urban areas while pushing households toward sprawling suburbs or distant exurban locations. The environmental case is tied directly to housing supply if desirable cities make building difficult. People do not disappear. Many relocate to places where their carbon footprint may be larger. This argument does not claim that cities are pollution-free. Instead, it distinguishes local environmental discomfort, such as congestion or crowding, from broader resource use and emissions. The result is a pragmatic defense of urban density as a climate-relevant policy. Fourthly, human capital explains why some post-industrial cities adapt. Triumph of the City places unusual emphasis on education and skills as the foundation of long-term urban success. Glaser argues that buildings, factories, ports, and infrastructure matter, but they cannot substitute for human capital. Cities thrive when they contain people who can create, absorb, and transmit knowledge. This helps explain differences among older industrial cities. Some places were able to move from manufacturing into finance, education, healthcare, technology, design, or professional services because they had diversified skills and institutions. Others suffered more deeply when their core industries declined because their economies and workforces were less adaptable. The book's discussion of places such as Detroit is part of this broader argument about the danger of relying on physical capital or a single dominant industry. Glaser also connects this theme to high technology clusters such as Bangalore and Silicon Valley, where skilled workers and firms reinforce one another through hiring networks. Competition and learning. The practical implication is that urban revival cannot be reduced to constructing landmark buildings, stadiums, or symbolic projects. A city must invest in people, education, safety, and conditions that let skilled and ambitious residents interact productively. For Glaser, the most valuable urban asset is not the cityscape, but the accumulated capacity of its residents. Lastly, housing rules, preservation, and the political barriers to urban growth, the book is also a policy argument against rules that prevent successful cities from accommodating more people. Glaser is especially critical of excessive zoning restrictions, height limits, and land use controls that constrain housing supply in places where demand is high. When building is restricted, prices rise, lower and middle income households are excluded, and growth is displaced to less productive or more environmentally costly locations. This argument does not mean that every building should be allowed everywhere, but it does challenge the idea that preserving neighborhood character should automatically outweigh access, affordability, and opportunity. Glaser also treats architectural preservation with skepticism when it freezes large parts of economically vital cities. He recognizes that historical buildings can have cultural value, yet he argues that preservation can become a privilege for current residents at the expense of future residents who are priced out. This is one of the book's clearest tensions. It values cities as living systems of human exchange more than as fixed collections of structures. The policy lesson is that urban success requires flexibility. A city that cannot build enough homes may preserve its appearance while undermining the very density, diversity, and mobility that made it valuable. In conclusion, Triumph of the City is best suited for readers who want a rigorous but accessible explanation of why urban life matters economically, socially, and environmentally. It is especially useful for urban planners, local officials, housing advocates, economists, environmental policy readers, and general readers interested in why some cities flourish while others decline. Its practical benefit is that it gives readers a framework for evaluating urban policy beyond surface impressions. Congestion, high prices, visible poverty, and tall buildings are not treated as isolated problems. They are connected to migration, housing supply, labor markets, education, and environmental trade-offs. The book's intellectual benefit is its insistence on comparison. Glaser repeatedly asks whether cities should be judged against an idealized alternative or against the real conditions of suburbs, rural poverty, and low-density growth. Compared with many urban books that focus mainly on design, architecture, street life, or local history, this one stands out for its economic logic and global range. It is less romantic than works that celebrate urban culture and less technical than academic urban economics. Its distinctiveness lies in combining a strong pro-density argument with policy implications about zoning, human capital, environmental impact, and opportunity. Readers should also approach it critically, since its optimism can understate social costs, but that tension is part of what makes the book influential. If you would like to support Edward Glaser, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.